I've wanted to have a guest on this podcast since before I started recording them. I think an important part of learning as a community is that we learn from each other. And what better way than to have the first guest as not only somebody that I consider a close personal friend, but also an incredible award-winning photographer, a model, and a cosplay artist. Ladies and gentlemen, I am so proud to be able to have Elle Sutcliffe on this podcast, and I really think that she's got so much valuable information to share with you guys. I'm going to leave all the details of Elle's social media in the show notes, but if you want to follow her on Instagram, her main account is Elle_Sutcliffe. She mentions throughout this podcast a few other accounts that she's got, so be sure to go and check her out. But without further ado, let's get onto the podcast and my interview with the incredible Elle Sutcliffe.
Hey, Elle, are you okay?
I'm good. How are you?
Yes, I'm good, thank you. I'm good. So thank you for bearing with me this morning while I was trying to iron out those technical details. But I think we're all good now. I think the quality of the audio is going to be okay for the podcast. But only time will
tell. All right, that'll do. Exactly.
So I've already done a little introduction for you on the podcast, which I'm going to keep secret and allow you to hear for the first time, mainly because I want to force you to listen to the podcast as well, because I need the numbers.
But okay.
For anybody that's listening to this and doesn't know who you are, do you want to give a short introduction into who you are and what you do?
Cool. Okay. My name's Eleanor Sutcliffe. I'm a photographer, model, and business owner. And I live in Birmingham. Yeah.
Awesome. And the fact that you mentioned that you're a cosplayer, I guess, is a very tenuous and weak link into my second question. And this was me just trying to be smart about how I worded it. So I think that a lot of creative people, much like superheroes or villains, have an origin story. I don't think that there are many creatives, photographers or models alike that have doing that and knew that that was what they wanted to do from the beginning. I think most of us have got a bit of a background. So let's hear yours. What were you before you were all of those things?
Oh, I was weird, Gareth. I was so weird. I grew up in North Wales, right out in the sticks, in the middle of nowhere. And I picked up a camera probably when I was about 12 or 13. It was my dad's. And I didn't actually know that my dad used to shoot concerts and live shows. And I was completely unaware. Never mentioned it until about a year ago. And I started to, there was a music night in our village that you couldn't get into unless you had ID, unless you were working it. So I struck a deal essentially with the guys that ran it in that if they let me in, I would take photos of it and give them to them for free, which I did then for about 6 months. Those photos are truly horrendous. I never want them to see the light of day. And then it came to kind of when I was deciding where I wanted to go for university, and I'd always wanted to do medicine. I actually wanted to study biochemistry, and last minute I changed that and I actually came to Birmingham to study costume design, because there's a lot of sewing. That's where a lot of the cosplaying comes in as well. But after about a year of doing that, I'd go to university in the day and I'd be shooting shows and like concerts and events and nightclubs and stuff in the evening. At the end of second year, my tutor sat me down and they said, look, you can't keep this up. I was literally working myself to death. It was horrendous. And they were like, you need to decide, you know, you've got final year coming up. This is a really, really important time. You need to pick between that and the photography. And I was like, right, okay, see ya. And I ended up leaving with O2. So I'm on their house photographer list now. So I shoot shows there. I also shoot for Express and Star, covering most of the shows at the arenas, as well as kind of expos and events, so things like Insomnia, Comic-Con, that type of thing. So that's what I do now.
Oh wow. So I didn't think that I was going to learn anything about you on this podcast. Again, for those people that are listening that don't know, you and I are pals outside of the industry. I didn't think that I was going to learn much about you, but I don't think there was a single sentence in that entire little monologue that you just gave where I didn't learn something new about you. So let me dive into this a little bit. So your dad was a gig photographer before you were, and you didn't even know this when you developed a passion for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so this was when he was young. So this was when he first met my mum, which would have been when he was around about my age, so kind of, you know, early 20s. He used to love live music. He was a mod growing up. You know, he listened to like The Jam, all of that, you know, massive Paul Weller fan. But he couldn't afford to go to like shows. Tickets were expensive. You know what I mean? And my dad was a bit of a cheapskate growing up, and a bit he liked to kind of push the boundaries and see what he could get away with. He actually worked as a music photographer shooting on film. And I didn't find this out until about a year ago, because it came up in conversation at home where I just happened to ask him, you know, oh, when did you start taking pictures? And he was like, oh, I used to shoot bands. And I was like, I can't believe you never told me. And he was like, well, you never asked. And so it kind of in a roundabout way almost runs in the family. He's a paramedic now. He's a wonderful, wonderful man. I love him to bits. And I always thought that my mum was the creative one, because when I grew up, you know, she worked as a seamstress, and she still does now. And I learned a lot of my kind of creative skills from her. And it never kind of clicked in my head that there may have been something from my dad's side. But yeah.
That's incredible. And even to the point where you wanted to go to university to study medicine, was that an influence from your dad being a paramedic, or again, was that just something totally self-inspired?
When I was growing up, I was very weird. I got bullied a lot. I was very, very introverted, very insecure, but I was quite a smart kid. You know, I was quite bright. So I just threw myself into studying, and I was that kid in your class that you hated, you know, always ahead in a book, that type of thing. And it was only when I ended up moving schools, because I got bullied so much. I sat down with my parents and I was like, look, I can't, you know, I was young, but I think they saw that I was at a breaking point. I was really struggling, and it was having quite a detrimental effect, like, on my health. And where I lived in Wales, I don't know if you've ever been to Wales, Gareth, but it is like desolate. There is nothing around. So I ended up, in order to do my GCSEs, I had to go to a school that was, how far was it? I think 2.5 hour bus ride each day. So 2.5 hours in the morning, 2.5 hours at night. That was the length I was willing to go to get away from my school. So I used to, mum, bless her, she used to do the school run, get us all up at 5:30 in the morning, get us into town for 6, and we get the bus to get us, because I lived in a town called Dolgellau, and I ended up going to school in Aberystwyth. And it was only when I went to Aberystwyth that I actually, my art teacher, Mr. Ed, love him, if he hears this, he's an absolute gem. He actually got me to kind of see that when I was growing up, because I studied a lot, everyone was like, oh, you should do, you know, you should do medicine, you should do engineering, you should do some, you know, like a real degree, a real, you know, get a real job. And it was only when I, you know, having my art classes with Mr. Ed that I kind of saw that, yeah, you know, he didn't have what some people would class as a real job. He was an art teacher, but my God, he was happy. And it was really nice to see that. And I was like, I could actually do a job and enjoy it, and it not just be about money. Obviously, money's important, you know, but I could do something and be happy and be learning. And I think that was when it kind of flicked a little switch in my brain where I thought, actually, you know, could I go against what everyone's expecting of me and do something totally different? And that's what ended up happening.
It's so good that you realised that at a young age, because I guess I had the same realisation that I could do a job that made me happy and paid the bills at the same time, but it came a lot later for me. So it's so good that you realised that at such an early age, and you are able to pivot quite early and do something that you love and pay the bills. And
when I realised it, it was after GCSEs, right in the middle of A-levels. So to be honest, it was quite stressful. I actually went to Cambridge for one of their open days and was planning on applying to study biochem there. And it was only at Christmas in the application period that I sat down with my parents and I was like, I don't think I can do this. Like, I can't sit in a lab all my life. That's not, I can feel that that's not what I'm meant to do. And they were like, cool. I thought they were going to be furious. And it was one of those times where it really surprised me that how much support and faith that they had in me, because they were like, okay, that was absolutely fine. But, you know, you've got 3 weeks to figure out what you do want to do. So then it was this 3 week frantic period of thinking, oh my God, you know, is there a course out there that I'd want to do? And at this point, I still wasn't sure about photography. But, you know, I'd always enjoyed kind of costume design and theatre design and things like that. And that's how I ended up picking the, I attempted to do a course in costume design in Birmingham City University. So that's how I ended up here.
That's incredible. That's definitely one of the best origin stories that I've ever heard. That was good. So I guess looking back on your journey so far, and without wanting to sound patronizing, you are, at least compared to me, you are incredibly young, because I'm an old fart. So your photography or your creative journey as a career is still definitely in its infancy. Do you have a moment in that kind of time where you look back and you either really regret a decision that you made or a job that you took or something that you got involved in? And inversely, is there a moment in that career so far that you're super grateful that you did that and you took that opportunity and you got involved in that thing?
So many things I regret, Gareth. I think that's in any sort of creative job, there's going to be a lot of things that you regret.
If you say you regret meeting me, this call is over immediately.
Oh, I'll backtrack then. We'll cut that bit out. Oh God, what do I regret? I wish I was a little bit more confident in my work. I think it's very easy when you're a creative to kind of compare your work to people who, you know, have had a lot more time to invest in it. Like you said, you know, I am still young, I'm 22, and I get caught up in thinking that I'm running out of time, you know, and that I'm getting old and I need to be, you know, I need to be further with my career. And very, very often my partner will have to sit me down and be like, look, you know, you're 22, like, calm the fuck down. So, I think having more confidence in my work and being able to push it and be like, you know, I can do this job. A lot of the time I would actually turn down work because I didn't think I could do it, you know, and I wasn't confident enough in my abilities to be able to push myself to produce the work that I wanted. But learn from that. If I sat on my, you know, if I sat on my heels and didn't do any of the jobs that I saw because I didn't think I was capable of doing them, I'd have never taken on a photography job in my life. Do you know what I mean? I don't think you ever get over that kind of feeling of concern over your work and thinking, you know, can I actually do this? Inversely, what am I grateful for? Winning the Heavy Music Awards Young Photographer of the Year 2 years ago. That was an amazing moment.
I'd love for you to talk more about that, because I didn't realise that you'd won that until after we'd been friends for probably 3 months, and it was only when I was sort of going deep on your Instagram that I realised that. And I remember thinking at the time that it kind of made me sort of appreciate you as a creative person and as a friend a little bit more, because you'd won something that I would be immensely proud of. And you never once mentioned it in all the time that we chatted and stuff like that. So talk more about that. Tell me what that was like.
So it was Heavy Music Awards, for people that don't know. It's an awards ceremony. It's held in London, and it's held to celebrate all things about heavy music. When I won, it was only in its second year. It just moved to Coco in London. I don't know whether you've ever been to the Coco venue. It's a brilliant venue, fantastic. I won it kind of out of the blue. It was, they had two categories. They had Photographer of the Year and Young Photographer of the Year. And I entered on a whim with a photo that I'd taken of Enter Shikari, a fantastic band. You know, I every time they're in Birmingham, I'm fighting tooth and nail for a photo pass for them, and I always get some of my best images from them. And I applied, and then I actually went on holiday with my parents, and we broke down in the middle of France. And we were on this campsite in the middle of nowhere with like terrible internet. And I can remember my mum like running out from the reception being like, you know, you've made it into the final, you've made it into the final. And I didn't believe her at all. I was like, you're lying, you know, that can't be the case. And I ended it, yeah, it went to public vote and I won. And it was a wonderful feeling, because you'll know better than anyone, Gareth, that the photography industry is very, it's primarily male. Yeah. Male. A lot of the time older. As well, I know that in Birmingham there's a small handful of kind of young female photographers, and it can be difficult. A lot of the time I've had, you know, comments from photographers in the pit being like, oh, you're just a fangirl, you're just a groupie, you know, who did you sleep with to get that pass, and it happens more than you think. So for me to then be able to turn around and be like, look, you know, I won this, you know, this image, it people thought this was good enough, you know, to win, it was a wonderful feeling. But at the same time, it wasn't, a lot of people seem to think if you win an award like that, you know, that's it then, you know, you're flying high. And that's not what happened. You know, part of the award was I went to shoot Bloodstock Festival, and my photo pass actually got denied. So I wasn't able to, I traveled all the way, and then I wasn't given the access that I needed to shoot main stage or any of this. I think I was only allowed to shoot the acoustic stage in the end. And I didn't actually get any photo work for about 6 weeks after winning the award. So I think a lot of people tend to think, oh, you know, when you win that award, suddenly, you know, that means you're there and you haven't got to work. And, you know, truth be told, I had to work a lot harder once I won it, because a lot of people suddenly had an expectation of me because they'd seen, you know, oh, she's young. We haven't heard of her before. She's kind of swooped in out of nowhere. You know, who is she? What's she doing? And it does make people suddenly have a much higher standard of your work than you'd expect.
I think you touched on, I mean, first of all, an extraordinarily belated congratulations. It's immense that you won that, although I realised it was a while ago now. You touched on things for me. One of them's a really important lesson to learn, and one of them is really sad. And the really sad thing is that kind of behaviour that you experienced in the press pit from other photographers asking you who you slept with to get somewhere, the truth is that does exist, and it is because our industry is dominated by older men, of which I fall into that category. And I think
it is changing. Like, if you looked at the Heavy Music Awards this year, if you look at the nominations for Best Photographer, you know, Corinne Cummings, she's a wonderful London-based female photographer. I've had the pleasure of meeting her once or twice. She's fantastic. She really, you know, pushes for female inclusion in the music industry. Gemma McCord as well. She made it into the finals. When you just go through, you know, you can see that women are coming up more and more. Even with artists, you know, you've got wonderful female, you know, bands that have female members, such as Dream State. Their singer, she pushes a lot for kind of mental health while touring, you know, and explaining the issues that bands face, you know, with female members. I don't know if you ever saw, but Creeper, their keyboard player was actually denied access into her own show, despite the fact she had a AAA pass. Because security assumed she was a fangirl, and she had to be like, I'm in the fucking band. Do you know what I mean? The show can't happen without me. So it is changing, because especially with social media now, these issues are being highlighted, you know, very, very regularly. Bands will get pulled up on their behaviour. You know, photographers will get pulled up on their behaviour. Even fans, do you know what I mean? I've had a lot of run-ins with fans, you know, people grabbing you over the barrier, you know, people spitting on you, saying you're in their way. And I get it, you know, you've paid a lot of money for your ticket, but at the end of the day, it's our photos that you're going to be sharing. Do you know what I mean? So it is changing slowly. It's just taking a bit of time, and it's really nice to be one of the women. I got told by a photographer that I was too angry to make it in the music photography industry, and I love that. I love being I love being an angry woman. I was too angry. It was a what show was it? It was Paramore at Birmingham Arena. I was told by a photographer that I was having a bit of a tiff with security over some issues with my pass because I was the only one out of all the photographers who had been ID'd. All the other photographers, they'd just been given their passes. And coincidentally, they were all male. And as soon as I came up to get my pass, you know, they were asking for my ID. They were asking for my confirmation. You know, they really didn't want to hand it over. And I made a, you know, I mentioned to security. I didn't like kick up a fight or anything, but I just said, look, you know, that's a bit, that's not right, is it? And a photographer pulled me to the side, you know, and he said, oh, I just feel, you know, I'm just telling you this just because I'm looking out for you. But I think, you know, you need to be careful because you don't want to be too angry to make it in this industry. And I take that as the biggest compliment, to be honest.
Because I know you outside of work, I can definitely see why somebody told you that you were too angry.
Exactly.
Just marvellous that he felt the need to step in and chime in with his opinion when it hadn't even been asked for. I agree. I think the industry is changing. I think it's slowly changing. I'd like to see it change faster. For having been to a couple of my networking events, you'll know yourself, I'm immensely proud that we have such a diverse mix of people come to those events. You know, we have got those old school photographers that you can definitely tell they're part of our old boys club. But then we've got younger photographers, we've got young female photographers, we've got older female photographers. And it's really nice seeing that mix of people all sort of working together.
It's really, really lovely. It's one of the, especially in portraiture as well, I think a lot of people kind of assume that they can't do it because it is, you know, it's a male photographer thing. And the moment you step into one of your events, I remember when I first started modelling, your event was the first networking event that I'd ever done. And I kind of went in with the idea that it was going to be all old white men. And it was such a wonderful feeling when I got there that it, you know, that it wasn't. And you've got some really talented creatives that, you know, that are at your events. Amy Demido, photographer, you know, she's fantastic. Holly Louise as well. She's been at a couple of your events. You know, she's a wonderful female photographer. Both young female photographers who are killing it in the industry at the moment. That are mixing and mingling. And the nice thing about networking events as well is that people are willing to share. You know, it's not a case of my picture's going to be better than yours. I went the first, the only reason I did, and I hate to say this, Gareth, the reason why I agreed to do your networking event was because I couldn't afford to go on a studio lighting course. And I figured if I modelled at your event, I'd be able to learn. And that's why I went for the first time, because I didn't really know you. I think I'd shot with you once. Shot with you at all by that point. It was one of Connor's pictures that you used.
Absolutely, yeah. The first networking event that you came to, the reason that I asked you to come and model at it was because I desperately wanted to shoot with you, but didn't. You'd shot with some incredible people before working with me, and I didn't think that you would want to shoot with me one to one. So I thought, if I can get her at the networking event...
Gaz, no!
And we can build this relationship. Maybe there's some room to move into a one-to-one shoot. So no, don't feel bad that you took advantage of my networking event to learn lighting. I took advantage of my networking event to get to know you so that I could shoot with you.
That went completely in the opposite direction, because I went in the mindset of, you know, I'll learn a bit about studio lighting. And I turned up with my friend Brandon, and we both turned up with suits, and we just didn't stop shooting and laughing with people. And I didn't learn a single thing about studio lighting. I didn't learn anything at all, because I just spent the whole time networking and choosing. And it was definitely in one of my top five moments, because that was when I always grew up with very, very low self-esteem. And I think you'll know better than anyone, because I think you've seen the pictures of me when I was younger. I was very weird looking. I'd been conditioned to believe that I was too weird looking. Do you know what I mean?
You still are weird looking. You've made it
style. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I'm so weird looking. But I'm more comfortable with it now. I'm happy with it. You know, I can stand in front of a camera now and be like, this is how I look. You know, if you like it, great. And I know there's photographers out there who don't want to work with me because the way I look doesn't fit what they want. And that is okay. Not everyone is going to love the way you look. Not everyone is going to love your work. Do you know what I mean? If your work appeals to everybody, it's probably going to be pretty bland.
And I think that's an amazing point. And all jokes aside, I think it's not only is it okay that your look isn't everybody's cup of tea, I think it's actually an achievement that your look isn't everybody's cup of tea, because I think what it's made you is something that photographers and models alike strive for. And you have created a unique brand around who you are, that when somebody shoots with you, they know what they're going to get. They're going to get that sort of retro power Vogue look with the big curly red hair. And it's your signature look. And I think it's okay. Not just is it okay that it's not everybody's cup of tea, it's an achievement that it's not everybody's cup of tea.
Yeah. I think a lot of people will they think, oh, you know, if they don't want to work with me, you know, that's the end of it. And I know I'm not going to name them, but I know a very, very good portrait photographer whose work I think is fantastic. And my friend said to me, oh, you know, they've said that they don't want to shoot with you. And that doesn't mean that, you know, I don't hate them or anything like that. I admire their work and I think that they're a fantastic photographer. You know, a good friend in terms of photography, I know that I could, you know, drop them a message or, you know, catch them in person and be like, hey, can you help me with this? And they'd be like, yeah, that's totally fine. Just because you don't fit someone's look or someone's brand, it doesn't mean that they're now competition and that you have to beat them and you can't appreciate their work for what it is. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of photographers out there who shoot work. So let me come up with an example. Bartley's work is incredible. It's not something personally that I could do because I don't do, you know, I don't do implied nude. I don't do lingerie. That doesn't mean that I can't appreciate his work any less. I mean, his lighting is incredible. His studio setups are wonderful. You know, and I know that he does do a lot of, you know, a lot of kind of streetwear stuff as well, but he does shoot primarily, you know, lingerie, implied nude, very simple, very late, you know, very natural. And it's not the type of stuff that I could shoot or would shoot, but that doesn't mean that I appreciate it any less. You know, he's definitely in my top five photographers in Birmingham, just because he's so good. Do you know what I mean? He's so good at what he's found his niche and he's really worked at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And just before we move on, I just want to touch on the second point that you raised when you were talking about your kind of things that you were proud of. And that was the fact that you achieved something that within that field is considered to be kind of the goal. You know, you're recognized by a widely respected organization as, you know, the best at what you do. You won an award for that. And then you didn't get any work for 6 weeks. And I think it's important that, especially, you know, I say younger, but what I mean is newer photographers coming into the industry that you shouldn't ever sort of feel like you've reached the end goal and then sit back on your laurels, because that just doesn't happen. You know, there is no end goal. Our goal should never be to be better than anybody else. It should always be to be better than we were yesterday. And even if you start getting inundated with awards and requests to go and speak at events and stuff like that, that doesn't mean that you've made it. And it does mean that tomorrow is just another work day where you should still keep driving forward and striving to be better than you were the day before.
There's still so much that as a photographer and as a model that I've got to learn. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was only yesterday that I was posting in your group being like, hi, what's everyone's Lightroom workflow? Because mine's shocking. Do you know what I mean? And especially with music photography, you're working to, you know, an incredible time limit. A lot of the time, if you're working with a band, you get the first three songs to shoot the show. And by the end of the show, they need to have those images there edited and ready to be shared on social media. You know, and that is, you're talking 45 minutes to get everything done. So my workflow should be better than it is. And it's not. It's shocking. It's terribly slow. I'm not going to sit there on my high horse and be like, oh, well, I won this award, so that must mean that I'm good. You know, no, it means that I was lucky enough for people to appreciate my work enough to win that award. I couldn't have won that award without the 1,000-odd people that supported me and that voted for me. That doesn't mean that I'm done. That doesn't mean that I don't have anything more that I can learn. There's so much that I need to get my head around. You know what I mean? I'm trying to teach myself about, you know, editing and smart previews and things on Lightroom that you would expect for me to know. But the truth is, you know, I never studied photography. This wasn't something where, you know, I did the standard, you know, 3 years at university and then a job in a studio. Do you know what I mean? I was doing this around when I was, you know, cutting patterns and, you know, drafting patterns and cutting fabric and things like that. I would then run out of uni and jump on a weekend tour and then come back to uni for the Monday. So it was very, I was just learning from the people around me. So I do think it's not a case of, you know, oh, when you win that award, that's it, you're done. You're never done. And I think that's one of the beautiful parts of working in the creative industry. There's always something else that you could be trying. There's always new techniques. There's always kit that you can be looking at, that type of thing.
So all of that said, and this is kind of a classic job interview question, where do you see yourself in the next 5 years? And how much of your time right now are you spending planning for the future versus living in the moment?
I see myself on holiday. How about that? I haven't had a holiday in years.
Seriously. Especially given the current
absolutely
the thought of a holiday.
Let's all get on an £8 flight to Italy or £8 flight to France. So where do I see myself in 5 years' time? That's quite a difficult one. I try and not think of the future, bizarrely, because I find that I will spend so much time focusing on it, I kind of miss what's happening now. Do you know what I mean? If I'm always focusing on the future, then I'm not focusing on, you know, the shows that I'm shooting now or the photographers that I'm modeling for now or the cosplaying that I'm doing now. Little things like that. And what I don't want people to walk away from this podcast thinking is like, oh my God, you know, she's got this photography job and, you know, she's made it. I still have like a normal person job. You know, I work as a sales advisor for Lush. You know, I do some of their social media photography as well. But, you know, I work as a sales advisor because a lot of the time it's hard in the creative industry for, you know, to earn your keep. And at the end of the day, you know, I've still got to live. Bills have still got to be paid. And there's no, I think a lot of people see it as a bit shameful if you have to have a normal job to support your creative job. And I think, no, that's totally okay. In 5 years' time, I'd love to be able to be fully freelance. But the truth is, in the music industry, it's hard. I know big music photographers that work with, you know, big artists that come home and have warehouse jobs and have factory jobs and work as electricians, you know, and work as plumbers and things like that. Because it, you know, as glamorous as the music industry seems, you know, it doesn't pay. A lot of the time, you know, I've done tours before where my pay has been my £10 a day PD, which is personal allowance, which you spend on food. And you don't get pay. Do you know what I mean? So at the time, I think a lot of people will put this glamorous spin on it and they'll think that you're living this wonderfully glamorous lifestyle when in reality, you know, you're driving in a van 7 hours to play, you know, 5 songs opening for a band and then you're kipping on someone's living room floor, you know, and eating from you're just eating takeaways all the time. So I think 5 years' time, I'd love to be fully freelance. I'd love to be working a split between my photography and my modelling work. Whether that will happen, I don't know, but I'm not going to beat myself up about it if it doesn't. I'd love to be in a position where financially I'm secure enough for me and my partner to be able to get somewhere, you know, to live, because renting, especially in the city, you know, is financially crippling. And the amount of money that we have to spend on rent is infuriating. But I do try and plan for the future to an extent, but I don't beat myself up about it. Do you know what I mean? I'm just happy that I've got to this point, you know, and if something happened and I had to give all this up, I could do that happily because I know I gave it 110%. And I could walk away from it and be like, look, I've done all of this and that's okay.
I think I'm very much the same as you. I tend not to plan too far in advance. I tend to have a rock solid plan for the next 6 months. Then I have a loose idea of what I'm doing up to 12 months. And then after that, I'm kind of living by the seat of my pants. But I agree. I think your goal is to want to become freelance, you know, within the next fully freelance within the next 5 years, are perfectly achievable. And for knowing all of the side hustles that you've got going on at the moment, I think it's more than achievable.
So I think that's one thing as well that a lot of people forget. I think a lot of people think that, you know, oh, if you can do this job, you have to have this one job, you know, and that's not the case. I've got, you know, I work as a sales advisor, you know, I've got my photography work, I've got my modeling work, I've got cosplay work, I'm starting a business, a jewelry business. You know, it's okay to be dabbling in loads of different things if at the end of the day that brings in the income that you need.
I don't think it's okay to be dabbling in loads of different things. I think it's an absolute fucking necessity to be dabbling in different things. You know, at the time of recording this podcast, we're in the middle of a government mandated lockdown because of the COVID-19 coronavirus. And I think that all of the people that have one sole income as potentially a freelance photographer or a freelance model are shitting themselves right now because they have one revenue stream and that revenue stream just died to death and now they don't know what they're going to do. And I think those of us like yourself and like me that have 3, 4, or 5 different revenue streams coming in, we've taken a hit. My photography business has essentially stopped now until this lockdown ends. But I've got 3 or 4 different revenue streams that are still bringing an income in exactly the same as you have. So I don't think that it's okay that freelancers have a couple of different things going on. I think it's an absolute necessity that they do. And I think anybody that judges you for that has clearly never lived through hard times.
I think if you're going to put all your eggs in one basket, if you drop that basket, you're fucked. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. That's my logic. You know, I'm very lucky at the moment. You know, like you said, we are in lockdown. It's a very, very scary time. But because I work, you know, I work in retail, I'm lucky enough that my job is covered by the government grant to get 80%. So I know that I will be getting 80% of my income. That's still a massive hit, you know, for us. That means that, you know, my income per month is dropping way below what I'm used to. But instead of looking at it, you know, as, oh my God, you know, that's it now, you know, I'm only going to have this amount of money. It's like, okay, how am I going to make that money? How am I going to make up the missing portion, you know? And it's by, you know, it gives you that drive to do things like, you know, set up my jewelry business. Do you know what I mean? That has been kind of on the back burner now for a couple of months. And this has really given me the time essentially that I needed to kind of be stuck in a room with my laptop going, right, okay, I need to do X, Y, and Z. I started doing a course in digital marketing because I need to learn how to market digitally. I can't afford to pay somebody to do that, but I can find a course online that will teach me the rough basics. You know, I found a course that will teach me how to code roughly so I can set up my own website. Do you know what I mean? So it's just, I think looking at these things as if something bad happens, trying to look at it with, obviously you're always, I'm not going to sit here and be like, I'm an incredibly positive person. Do you know what I mean? I could be so negative at times. You know, ask my partner. He's the one that has to deal with me, like, you know, moping around crying, being like, why is nothing going right? But if you can kind of climb out that hole and be like, okay, this is shit, you can acknowledge that it's shit. That is absolutely fine. But if you can climb out and you can go, okay, where do I go from here? Do you know what I mean? And use it as a little kind of, use it as something to bounce off, essentially, to get you to where you want to be. That's great. That's totally fine.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So I realise that this is a tough one because, like we said, you're still very much in the early phases of your career and you've got so many different side hustles going on and you're still very much in a learning phase for all of those. But if you had the opportunity to sort of take a step back in time, whether that be 12 months, 18 months, 5 years, and give your younger self sort of a very short piece of advice, what would you say? What would be your advice to your younger self?
Oh my God, be kinder to yourself. Jesus, I used to beat myself up over the smallest things. you know, and I realize now that was terribly, terribly unhealthy. You know, in a very, you know, it was a learning curve, but it wasn't the way that I went about learning and getting into this industry wasn't particularly healthy. You know, and taking ownership of your achievements. A lot of the time I would kind of say to myself, oh, you know, I've only managed to shoot this band because, you know, I know someone who, you know, works, you know, I know who's a lighting engineer and he's probably put in a good word for me. You know, for a while I did a sound engineer, and I kind of, where we were living, we had a lot of bands coming through all the time. And what they would do is they would say, you know, that we would say to them, look, you know, you can stay over, you know, but in exchange, can we have some tickets to your show or can we have a press pass? And I would kind of say to myself, oh, you shouldn't be here. But I know that they wouldn't have given us that unless they thought that I could do it. Do you know what I mean? So being a little bit kinder to myself and kind of valuing my work a bit more, because I really, for years, didn't value it. And it was only, I'd say probably this year, when I started release, you know, I shot a couple of shows. Obviously, we had a bit of a rubbish start to the year because touring season hadn't really kicked in yet. And now that the COVID crisis has happened, you know, all shows have kind of have stopped completely. But I shot Waterparks and Lewis Capaldi. And I can remember being in the pit thinking like, my God, you've done this. Do you know what I mean? You got yourself here. You got the pass. You know, you said to the publication that you shoot for, this is who I want to go for, you know, and they asked to see your portfolio and they've looked at it and they've decided that you can do it. You know, if they can look at your work and have confidence in you, what the hell, you know, can I not do that? So I wish I could go back and say that to myself. I was very, very negative growing up. And yeah, especially from a young age, you know, I know a lot of people, I think a lot of people got bullied. And I think it has a much more detrimental effect than you'd expect. And it's quite weird now because I will go home and the kids that used to bully me in school will like be in the pub and they'll come over and they'll be like, hi, how are you doing? You know, oh, you've changed so much since you were in school. And yeah, it's a really weird feeling, but I think just to be a little bit kinder and kind of say to myself, okay, you've had a bit of a shit time, like give yourself a break. That's okay. If I could do that for myself, then that would be wonderful. And I think giving that, I'd give that same advice to someone that started out now. I'm reaching out as well. Don't have too much pride. You know, a lot of the time, if somebody said to me, can you do this? I'd be like, yeah, sure. When in reality, I had no idea how to do it. But I just didn't want to come across as inexperienced. Whereas now, you know, if somebody says to me, can you do that? You know, I'll be the first person to say to you, if you ask me, you know, oh, do you know about this lighting setup? I'll be like, fuck no, I've got no idea. Teach me. Do you know what I mean? I think pride is crap. Do you know what I mean? Throw that down the drain. Do you know, by all means, have pride in your work. Be proud of what you do. But don't be so proud of yourself that you're not willing to ask for help. The creative industry is wonderful because everyone is in the same boat. Everyone's going to pull their resources together to get you to the point where you want to be, because it is so rewarding to help somebody get there. So I think, yeah, just don't try and not be shy. If you're struggling, just ask for help. The amount of times, Gareth, that I have run around a photo pit screaming, asking if anybody's got a spare camera battery or SD card because I forgot to charge my batteries or I forgot to put in an SD card. You know, I've been known to turn up to shows before having no camera lenses in my bag. You know, that is how much of a scatterbrain I am. And if I was afraid to ask for help, I would never be able to shoot some of the shows that I've shot. I'm trying to think of an example. I shot Killswitch Engage. They were supporting, who were they supporting? They were supporting Iron Maiden at Genting Arena out at Resorts World. It was my biggest show I'd ever shot. And I turned up with no lenses. I got so worked up packing my bag, I haven't put any lenses in my bag. Thankfully, there was a lovely photographer there, didn't catch their name, they were a wonderful human being, and they let me borrow, they had a 24-70, and I didn't own a 24-70 at this point, I was still shooting on a 50mm prime, And they let me borrow it. And then I was like, cool, okay. A, you know, other photographers aren't scary. They're happy to help you out. And B, this is a sick lens. Where do I get it? So I think, yeah, if you throw that pride aside and you're happy to learn, then I think you'll get a lot more out of your creative journey than you'd expect.
I think there's a couple of awesome pieces of advice there for people for just starting out and for people now. I think being kinder to yourself when you're first starting out is great advice. I think being kinder to yourself when you're immensely experienced and you've got years under your belt, I think it's really important to remember that everybody's allowed to make mistakes and mess things up. And I think throwing your pride to one side and asking for help when you need it is phenomenal advice as well. For the people listening that already know you, or for the people that are listening and have jumped onto social media to try and find you, if people love your work, do you have any recommendations for who else they should check out? So maybe three other social media accounts that are similar to yours that you think people would get a kick out of seeing.
Oh, you're asking me. Oh, I know so many more than three, though. This isn't fair. Okay, I'll narrow it down into, because I've got a couple of different accounts. So if they've seen my music photography, which is Eleanor_Sutcliffe, not pushing myself out there or anything like that, but if you do want to go and look at it, that would be great. I haven't posted anything for a while.
This podcast is all about you. It is perfectly acceptable for you to promote yourself. So your music Instagram account is Eleanor_Sutcliffe.
Yeah, you'll find the picture is just a picture of Rao from Enter Shikari. You'll see it, you'll know it. If you've seen that and you think, oh, I quite like this stuff, then Sarah Maiden Photo, all one word. Sarah is a good friend of mine. She's a young female Birmingham-based music photographer. She makes the best coffee. She works in a coffee and bagel shop in the day, and then at night her little like alter ego is she runs around shooting shows. You'll know her if you see her in the pit. 9 times out of 10 she's got blue or yellow hair, and she is the most incredible music photographer. I look up to her work so much. She's taken some insane pictures of water parks. Who else has she shot? Let me have to think. The Main as well. If you're into like your pop punk shows, pop punk artists like Sarah she's wonderful. And she does really, her editing as well. She does these really dreamy edits with like falling confetti, and her color palette as well is just, it's beautiful. Who else have we got? So yeah, if you're into music photography, she's wonderful. If you've seen my modeling account, my personal account, which is L_Sutcliffe, 90% of my pictures have been taken by Connor. So Gaz, you know Connor already. So his Instagram is Claire Portraits. Connor is the portrait photographer we all want to be, isn't he? Let's be honest. He's great. He's fantastic. He does really cool, quite edgy portraits. And to be honest, he is one of the people that I have to, I've got a credit with kind of starting me off on this journey. Connor was the first photographer that I ever did a photo shoot with. We went round Digbeth, you've got to do this if you're a photographer. You've got to wander around Digbeth and get some pictures in front of some gates. You'll know Gareth better than anyone.
Absolutely. You've also got to take photos on that bridge by the custard factory, and you have to take
And smoke bombs as well. I have done a smoke bomb shoot.
Smoke bomb.
Yeah, you've got to take pictures on the bridge by the custard factory. Yeah, graffiti, absolutely. Yeah, I did my first shoot with Connor in a leather jacket that I personalised after being... I'd been fired essentially from a photography job, because I'd stood up for myself and because I'd said, you know, some of the stuff that was happening there. I'm not going to name who it was at all, but I just wasn't happy with the way that some of the female staff were being treated. I got let go and I customized this jacket. We went down to Digbeth, shot a load of stuff in it, and he kind of started me off on my modeling journey. So I've got a lot to credit Connor for. And if you just go through Connor's feed as well, you can really see how he's progressed. And like his progression as a photographer.
Yeah,
he's super nice as well.
Yeah, I'm just looking at Connor's Instagram feed now as we're chatting. And I guess it's reminded me what an incredible photographer he is. He's a really nice person as well. He's one of my
favorites. Yeah, he's very genuine as well. Do you know what I mean? If he doesn't like something, if he doesn't like the way you look, he will say. So if you're not there, you know, if you're not good with honesty, like, maybe give him a miss. He also does the most horrendous roasts on Instagram stories. So if you want your work ripped apart, by all means, sign up for one of those. Gaz, I remember you did it, and he said that your focusing was softer than a cat covered in talc. And I'll never forget that, because I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah. And that was an image of you that he roasted as well. So the fact that the three of us are friends doesn't mean that he's going to pull any punches. If anything, it means that he's going to be more savage than he would with anybody else.
Yeah, exactly. He's very, very savage. So if you're not down for that, then maybe don't go near that. But otherwise, yeah, by all means, go ahead. And then it's my cosplaying account, which is quite new, which is Sooty Cosplay. Sooty's my little nickname. It's used by my close friends and some of my family. It was actually one of the names that I was called in school when people used to tease me because I had to wear a little eye patch. So people said I looked like Sooty off of Sooty and Sweep. My partner started using it for me and we kind of took it back and I was like, actually I quite like that name. So it's Sooty Cosplays.
I love that story. I love that Sooty was a nickname that you got sort of picked on with. You know, it was something that somebody created as a derogatory term for you. And you've taken ownership of that and almost made it an alter ego for yourself. And now it's a nickname that you love. I love that. I think that's brilliant.
It was when I first started out as a photographer, and I think, Gaz, you'll be able to understand this. When you first start doing photography, you always pick a really, really crap photography name. Pick a really terrible, you know, and mine was Sooty Photography. And I hate that now. Do you know what I mean? I look at it now and I like die a little bit inside. But you know, we've all got to make those mistakes. But I took it for my cosplaying.
You know, I had two terrible names in my past as a photographer, and I guess a few people might know one of them. I don't think anybody knows the other one. I'll share them now as a world exclusive. So when I was very firmly an amateur photographer, and I wasn't doing this as any kind of living. In fact, I think I might have been working in the call centre at the time when I was much, much younger. My photography name was Silverback Images.
A gorilla.
Absolutely. And it was because when I was kind of younger, I've always been broadly the size that I am now. So I'm like 6 foot tall, 18 and a half stone. A few friends used to tell me that I looked like a silverback gorilla. And so, Silverback Images was one of my earlier photography names. Thankfully, thankfully one that I abandoned quite quickly. But then the second one, which I guess is slightly less funny, but looking back on it now, I'm like, dear God, why did I do that? So one of my earliest businesses, so this wasn't just an Instagram name that I gave to myself. This was a business that was registered with Companies House, that was a proper sort of tax-paying legitimate company, was Fanatic Media. And my strap line to that business was because we're fanatical about what we do. And in hindsight, a few years later, I traded as this company for a couple of years. And then I kind of had this moment where I thought, I'm making myself sound a little bit like a terrorist organization, like I'm some kind of fanatical photographer. So, yeah, I quickly abandoned.
Yeah, you're way too passionate. Absolutely. Like you've taken it too far.
And ironically, that was the business name when the bulk of the work that I was doing was nightlife photography. So yes, whatever you're calling yourself at the moment, it is much better than what I was calling my business back when I was doing nightlife and gig photography work. But anyway, let's get off of my embarrassing stories and go back to your
life. I absolutely love that.
If somebody loves your cosplaying stuff, who's another account that they should follow?
Some of the pictures that get a lot of the stuff that I do, I'm still quite new to cosplaying, and I'll get that out there right now. you know, I'm working, obviously quarantine is a great time to be working on cosplays if you've got the stuff. So at the moment I'm working on a Lola Bunny, and I'm also working on a Genderbank Geralt from The Witcher, which I'm really excited about. And if you love kind of those like Viking style costumes and outfits, then Norse Dragon Armory is a brilliant account. The gentleman that runs it, he makes all of the he's a photographer, and he runs photography events where he makes all of the Viking armor by hand. So it's all of it, a lot of it is like leather, fur, things like that, but it's all hand stitched, and a lot of it as well is genuine Viking replicas of weapons. So I was quite lucky to shoot with him a couple of months ago. We were meant to do a shoot on the 1st of July in Cannock Chase with wolves. So I was going to shoot with wolves. I was so excited. But obviously we've had to postpone that because of the current COVID-19 crisis. But yeah, he's a really, 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 really great guy. But yeah, his costumes are just second to none. If you're big into kind of your costumes, and if you want to see how a costume can really make an image, and if especially if you're into more of that fantasy type photography, check him out. He does events quite regularly. He does about 6 a year, I think. Normally about 4 to 6 models, a good mix of male and female as well. And none of this kind of, a lot of the time, especially in like fantasy stuff, you know, the guys are in like incredible armor and the girls are in like a chainmail bikini. That gets thrown out the window completely here. Do you know what I mean? When I shot with him, I had full leather tunic. I had loads of like rune pendants, you know, I had axes, I had a sword, gauntlets, everything. Yeah, and it's really, really cool and something quite different. So if you are interested in doing something like that, his events are wonderful. But even if you just follow his page, it really shows how kind of props and styling can really make or break an image.
And what's his Instagram again?
It's Norse Dragon Armory. It's all one word. If you go on to my, if you go onto my cosplay page, it's the third post that I've put up. You'll know it. I look very angry, and I'm holding a sword, which kind of sets it apart from the rest of them.
Fair enough.
But I've tagged him in there.
Elle, I've had an absolute blast talking to you, and like I said, I didn't think that I would learn anything new about you on this call, but I most definitely have. We're coming up on an hour that we've been chatting, which kind of feels insane. It feels like I've had you on the phone for about...
I'm sorry.
Hour. It was an hour well spent. So I'm gonna end this brief sort of chat stroke interview with a couple of quick fire questions. And I don't think you will have ever seen it, because maybe you're a touch on the young side for this, but there was a show called Inside the Actor's Studio, which was hosted by a guy called James Lipton, who in my opinion was one of the greatest sort of chat show hosts ever. Sadly passed away on the 2nd of March this year, but he would close out all of his interviews with asking his guests some quickfire questions. And the theory was that you would catch the guest on the back foot, and you're only allowed to answer sort of one or two words to each question. You're not allowed to think about it for too long. And in doing so, you actually learn an awful lot about the person from their answers to these quickfire questions. So if you're up for it, I've got a few quickfire questions to close out this interview.
Absolutely. Let's have a laugh.
Right. Let's get started then. What's your favourite word?
It's a Welsh word. It's hiraeth, and it's the Welsh word for the longing for one's home.
Fair enough. I like it. What's your least favourite word?
Phlegm.
Phlegm? That's a disgusting word. That is a disgusting word.
I hate it.
What turns you on creatively, spiritually, or emotionally?
Honesty.
What turns you off?
Self-righteousness.
What's your favourite curse word?
Fuck.
It's a good word.
Waterfalls. Love a good waterfall.
What sound or noise do you hate?
A bit of a weird one. The sound of wet bread hitting something. It really freaks me out.
What profession?
My brothers used to chase me with wet bread, and that's why. Hate it. Hate it.
Okay. Weird brothers. What profession in your own would you like to attempt?
A potter, making pottery.
Nice. What profession would you not like to do?
I'm in the medical industry. I'm too scared of messing things up.
And finally, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
How the hell did you get here?
I like it. Elle, thank you so much. We have literally just hit an hour. And like I say, I genuinely enjoyed that hour chatting to you. So thank you for giving up some time this morning. And what I'm going to do is, in the show notes to this podcast, I'm going to put all of your social media links. I'm going to put all of the ways that people can get in touch with you and can follow you. And this episode's going to be coming out in sort of about a week's time. So thank you again for giving us this time this morning.
No problem, anytime.
I just want to take this opportunity to thank Elle once again for spending just over an hour with me this morning over the phone doing this podcast. She was an absolute gem for giving up her time. She's really busy at the moment setting up her new business, so I'm very grateful for that. Anyway, folks, I really hope that you enjoyed that episode. I know that the audio quality wasn't as good as it usually is. Please bear with me while we're sort of experimenting with doing interviews with people over the phone. There are going to be some sort of bumps in the road. I already have a good idea how we can clean up a lot of that audio in time for the next interview that I do. But for now, I just want to say thank you so much once again for giving up your time and listening to this podcast. I really hope that it's helped. If you want to be the first to know when there are new podcasts out, the best thing that you can do is subscribe on the podcasting platforms or head over to my website. That's www.garethwelch.co.uk and subscribe to my newsletter. I will only send out one email a week, and it's a digest of all of the content that I've put out on the podcasting platforms, on my blog, on my YouTube channel, and over on Instagram. If you want to engage with me on social media, then please do. I actively encourage that. You can find me. My username is exactly the same on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. It's GWVIS. In the meantime, folks, remember, the fastest way to improve as a photographer is to get out there and take pictures. But while I've got your attention, let me see if I can help.